And good morning. here's what I'm thinking about right now. This program's Health Essentials. Everybody gets to a point, if you live long enough on the earth, where your body breaks down. And sometimes you actually have what's called a broken bone. Well, the question is, what do you do if you have a broken bone? Well, I came across a study. I think it comes from the year 2008. Researchers from Tabriz University of Medical Sciences in Iran, they published a small human study in which 60 patients with a broken bone participated as test subjects, or they said, sure, we'll be your guinea pig. And now, just as a side point, the reason why this intrigued me is because I began to question, are there actually any drugs that they can give a person when they go to the hospital and they have a broken bone? And I've kind of dealt with this over the years many, many times, and so maybe I've gone to the School of Hard Rocks on this, or the Hard Rock University. Because you figure out real quick, there's things that definitely prevent the bones from healing, but that's what you want. You want the bones to form a union. That's what healing is, so they can be back in good repair. I don't want a person to have a broken leg the rest of their life, or a broken vertebrae in their back. Now, sometimes, yes, I've seen a bone recently where the compression fracture was so complete it looked like a flat pancake. Don't know that I've ever seen another one quite like that, but there's no way that that bone's going to just pop right back up into place. Okay, so here's a study from Tabriz University. And what they did was researchers divided the patients into two groups of equal size. So for 60 days, that's just roughly 2 months, give or take, one group received a daily supplement with 50 milligrams of zinc sulfate, while the other group just received a daily placebo. That means it didn't have any zinc in it. Now, this is a point that I think is important to me to make. When you have 50 milligrams of zinc sulfate, that actually contains 11.5 milligrams of elemental zinc. So basically, I'm referring to what is a useful amount of zinc in the 50 milligrams of zinc sulfate. You get 11.5 milligrams, which on paper, does 11.5 milligrams of zinc sound like a whole lot to you? Well, no, it doesn't. Okay. The test subjects consume somewhere between 5 to 6 milligrams of zinc just through their normal or their regular diet. The everyday foods, they calculated 5 to 6 milligrams of zinc. Okay. Now, if you live here in America and not over in Persia, what you would say is, well, American food scientists, they want your zinc intake being somewhere between 8 and 11 milligrams of zinc, elemental zinc per day. So what they did was, when they gave these people with broken bones 11.5 milligrams of elemental zinc, they're just asking the question, that's pretty close to what Americans would get anyway. Okay, so here's another point. Would you agree with me that when you're trying to heal broken bones, your body requires a little bit more zinc than what you normally would when when the bones aren't broken? Okay, here's the results right here. When the researchers took scans of the bone fracture at the 60 days after the bone fracture, and they compared them with scans made when the trial started, they saw that the new bone tissue growth had formed. They call that a callus. It's almost like when they take a scan or an x-ray, it looks like somebody's taking a welding rod and welding the two pieces of metal together, and you can see where they brought them together with the weld. Okay, but in the case of the human body, you look at how the body is able to go to the site of the fracture and lay down brand new bone in an attempt to try to strengthen, heal, and resolve the fracture. And so they saw that the bone was growing very, very well in the control group. They said about half of them did. That means half of them didn't. That's actually not very well at all. Wouldn't that be frustrating after 2 months to get an x-ray of a broken bone and look at it and go, well, this is not good. My body's not repairing it. So, anyway, I'll just cut to the chase. In the zinc group, where they just gave them 11.5 milligrams of elemental zinc, oh my goodness, they had 80% healing. I mean, you cannot see the graph that I have in front of me, but it's just night and day different. So maybe this is for your consideration. If you've had an injury to the body, maybe it's a bad fall and you haven't had a broken bone. It's going to be multiple times a year I see broken ribs. Of course, I kind of have my own protocol for that. But you are okay with the idea that if you have something broken, your body may actually require a little bit more nutrition to get your body back in good working order. Okay, here's the conclusion right here. This is what the researchers wrote. There are still no medicines that accelerate the healing of broken bones. The researchers write in the final paragraphs of their article. Although more research is needed, the Iranians say their small intervention study suggests that zinc supplementation may have a role as a pharmacological tool in the healing of bone fracture in humans. Well, you can call it pharmacological if you want to. It's still nutrition. Now, does that make sense? I came across this other article that I thought was so simple and to the point. This one actually is probably closer to free, though. That zinc cost a few dollars. This next one doesn't cost anything. And it says, this is what piqued my interest. The title of it is, "The Combination of Exposure to Sunlight and Walking Makes Your Bones Significantly Stronger." I know you're thinking, we know these things already, Dr. Morgan. Okay. According to a small human study in the Journal of Bone and Mineral Metabolism. Now, I'm just curious. If you purchase a subscription to the Journal of Bone and Mineral Metabolism, you probably get, I don't know, 2 to maybe 4 issues a year. Probably costs about $600. But anyway, they look at this small human study. Nothing wrong with that. Let me go ahead and break it down for you. Okay. This was done in Korea. Korean researchers affiliated with Kyungi University. I'm sure I botched that. I'm so sorry. It's spelled K-Y-U-N-G-G-I. Kyungi University. What they did was they experimented with several dozen people between the ages of 61... all the way up to 73, who, according to scans, they were in a preliminary stage of osteoporosis. I think what you would call that is, if it's not osteoporosis, but they can see the bones are getting thinner, they're not as thick as they used to be, they would call that osteopenia. So if you hear your doctor say, your DEXA scan, or your bones, well, not a bone scan, a DEXA, dual dosimetry, well, it's the x-ray of the bone. But if that comes back and it says, well, I've got some news for you. Your bones are not quite as thick as they should be. You have osteopenia. Now, thank goodness you don't have osteoporosis, which there's many degrees of that, but just use your imagination here. You do not want your bones so thin that you're at the risk of having a hip fracture or a broken bone. The studies on that are not good. So let's do what we can to strengthen and fortify your body. Does that make sense? Okay, this is real simple, very straightforward, but I like the way they did this. The Koreans divided their subjects into 4 groups. And of course, if there's 4 groups, each one is going to be just a little bit different than the other, but I think that's a good way to put everything to the test. So, for the first group, which is also their control group, they didn't do anything at all, except they took a supplement containing 600 milligrams of calcium and then 800 international units of vitamin D3. So in this control, and so all of the groups, all 4 groups, they took the calcium and the vitamin D. Okay? Well, control group number 2. This is how they were different. The subjects in the second group, They went outside for 20 to 30 minutes three times a week during the 24 weeks that the trial lasted. And they exposed their face, their arms, and their legs to sunlight. That's all they did, is go outside. Remember, they're taking calcium and vitamin D, but the researchers hoped that exposure to sunlight would increase their vitamin D levels, making their bones stronger. Does that make sense? Now just remember, if a elderly person or even maybe a not-so-elderly person has a hip fracture, things don't go well. We're trying to prevent that. I'd rather set our minds on ensuring that you're as strong and radiant as possible, not waiting for your bones to break. Okay, here's group number three. The subjects in the third group went for a 30 to 60-minute walk three times a week. That doesn't sound like too much. The subjects walked in the evening after the sun had gone down. Isn't that interesting? Walking puts a strain on the bones and the lower body and makes them stronger, or at least that's what the researchers had hoped for. And so the Koreans hoped that they would see a significant improvement on the test subjects if they would just walk after the sun went down. 30, 60 minutes, three times a week. And here's group number four. A fourth group went for a walk during the day. This group would benefit from both sunlight and exercise, the research suspected. Okay, the vitamin D levels went up in all the groups. These are the results, by the way. But only the increase in subjects who were exposed to sunlight really made a difference. Are you kidding me? It says the bone mass of the subjects in the control group didn't change. Those are the ones that just took the supplement. They only took calcium, and they only took vitamin D3. Okay? Their bone mass didn't change. Do you kind of get the idea here that there might be something that you have to do to encourage your body to strengthen? But the bone mass increased in the sun exposure only group and the nighttime brisk walking group. So here's a group of people that just went outside and got some natural sunlight. Well, their bones increased in density. I like that. And the ones that went for a brisk walk in the evening after the sun had gone down, no sunlight exposure, theirs did also. But guess which group had the most bone density or the most new bone growth or the thickening? That was group number four. That was a group that went for a walk during the daytime. And that group would benefit from both sunlight and exercise, the researchers suspected. I didn't copy this article right here, but I looked at it. It said, you know what Knox gelatin is? So that would be what, you know, Jell-O is made of, right? Okay. But you can go to the store and you can just buy a box of Knox gelatin. I mean, it's an animal product. But here's the title right here. It kind of piqued my interest. I wish I'd read the article, but I did not. Sometimes I pick and choose what I can read or what I want to, or what maybe I just push to the side. I mean, aren't you the same way? Don't you come across information and say, oh, yes, this might be good. I need to read that later. But you've got so many other things in front of you. You're just trying to digest and put to the test the ones that you have to find out which is good and maybe which one's not. And that's one thing that I like to do. I want to bring up information that I think is going to be good for you. Well, here's one article right here. This comes from February the 25th, 2020. I don't really even know the journal it comes from, but this is what the study says. The less soda you drink, the stronger your bones are. And I'm thinking, oh, wow, that's like amazing information there. I know you get that. I'm just being slightly sarcastic. Okay, the less soda you drink, the stronger your bones are. Well, what if I just reverse that and turn it around? The more soft drinks you drink, the weaker your bones are going to be. That's the truth of it. I think one of the reasons why is because when you drink a soda that contains what's called phosphoric acid, phosphoric acid is really potent stuff. But that's what you're going to find in a soda water. And so if you drink a soda water with phosphoric acid, it's going to literally leach minerals from your bones at a high, there's a high cost for it. And so are your bones going to be stronger if they lose their precious minerals that make them strong and flexible and hard and dense? No. Here's another article that I did not copy off, but it comes from August the 16th, and the year is 2017. Here's the title. Diet with lots of olive oil, fruit, and fish protects against osteoporosis. Okay? Then there's another article. Yogurt is a better weapon against osteoporosis than milk is. Comes from the Archive of Strong Bones Journal. If you want to join me on the radio, there is a phone line open, but it's at 903-586-6592. So if you tried to call the old number, I don't think that line exactly works the way it should. So if you'll dial the new number, 903-586-6592. So just make that one little simple change and dial line number two. So if you want to call me and ask a question, please feel free to do so. But the number is 903-586-6592. Here we go. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Well, good morning. Hey, I had a kidney stone and actually just passed it last night.
Bless your heart.
An excruciating evening.
That may be an understatement.
I was told it's the next thing to giving birth, so from a male standpoint, I guess. Yes, a few of them must have had a kidney stone to be able to say, make that statement.
I'm so sorry for your Friday evening.
However, this is the second one I've passed in about a little over a year. Is there a way to avoid developing kidney stones?
Yeah. 95% of all the stones are made of one chemical substance called calcium oxalate.
Okay.
Do you know what foods are high in oxalate?
I have no idea.
Okay. White potatoes, nuts, and spinach.
All nuts?
They have some. I think the one that has by far and away the highest amount of calcium oxalate, which if it saturates in the kidneys, it's going to form a stone. That's called an almond.
I eat those.
No, you used to eat those.
I used to. Thank you for checking my.
Sorry, I'm just trying to be funny.
No, that's.
Actually, all jokes, we can make all the jokes we want, but this is not a laughing matter. I wouldn't wish this on my worst enemy.
Okay.
So if you eat almonds, you may want to give those up. And can I tell you some of the things that I would look at doing if it were me?
Sure.
I may not have all the research in front of me, but let me say it this way. If I had some history of kidney stones, I would just say, I'd take a step back and evaluate and ask myself, am I actually drinking enough water to keep my kidneys clean? And if I wasn't hydrated real well, I think that's the first thing I try to correct. Number two, and I may bundle these together, but between drinking soft drinks or sugar water in a can, you know, like mm-hmm. a Pepsi, something like that, I would just completely cut those out because you're asking for a ton of minerals to leach out of your kidneys or go through your kidneys when you drink soft drinks.
I'm okay with that because I don't drink any of that.
Good. So you're clear on those.
Yep.
Next thing that I might bundle, I kind of think, just from doing lots of study on this, that one of the hardest substances on the kidneys would have to be refined sugar. Now, you notice I said refined sugar. I did not say eating a bowl of cherries or fruit salad or fresh strawberries. I was telling a lady yesterday that, the day before, there was a study from Taiwan. And they showed that when people had annoying floaters in their eyes, you know what a floater is?
I have them.
Okay. They showed in this study that if they could just convince the people to eat fresh pineapple,
really?
Then the floaters would disappear and go away. And I thought, oh, man, that's radical. I thought only Silicon Valley computer chips came out of Taiwan, but now we have studies on floaters and pineapple consumption. But you get what I'm saying. If you eat fruit you know, like an apple. I'm not aware of that ever being really hard on the kidneys, but if you had a fried apple pie from a fast food restaurant that was loaded with a lot of sugar, that's a whole different animal. So one of the minerals that I think plays a huge role in preventing stone formation would be the element called magnesium. And so you might want to just reconsider your supplementation, but magnesium may offer you some protection and some help against stone formation. Now, what has been used historically for hundreds of years, when I say hundreds, I'm talking about a century plus, there's an herb called gravel root. Now, that's the one that does a great job of helping to remove buildup of calcium oxalate. By the way, these are the same exact principles that cause a person to have horrible vertigo, where they get rocks in their ears, or the semicircular canals where those rocks form. They're like kidney stones in the ears, but it just makes a person feel horrible, like, I can't do it. I can't stand up. Everything's spinning. I feel like I want to vomit if I sit up. Yeah, it's horrible. So those are a few of the things you'd look at.
So is magnesium in that, there's MSM at the granary?
No, MSM is sulfur.
Oh, that's sulfur.
Which I'm, there's nothing wrong with bringing that up. I think MSM, which is methyl sulfonylmethane, I think that's really good for the human body. Okay. Meaning we do need sulfur to function optimally. I know I'm getting on a sidetrack here slightly. Without sulfur in the human body, you're going to find a whole lot more autism and Asperger's as compared to kids that have sulfur. That's one of the hallmarks of somebody that has cognitive decline or that has dementia, Alzheimer's, that sort of thing, is they're low in sulfur.
Okay.
And you actually help your body sulfate or make sulfur when you're out in the sunlight, which I realize that's not popular in modern times. Don't go outside. Stay indoors all day long.
I guess I need to be outside in my swimming suit walking the neighborhood now.
Yeah, right now, this very minute. I can talk to you while you're on your cell phone. What could go wrong with that, right?
I'm actually enjoying the morning without pain, so no. I'm,
you know what?
Right for the moment.
I would be just like you. I would be saying, oh, Lord, thank you. You carried me through the deep watch of the night, the painful night. Ooh. And now a new day dawns. I get to start over again.
There were a lot of prayers last night, even for my wife, who I kept up all night. She, even though I went to another room, she refused to close the bedroom door. She wanted to make sure I was okay.
You talk about a great woman. Nice. That's excellent. The other thing I want you to consider is maybe this is a good application for something that's not going to sound very scientific. Maybe you should start making a morning hot toddy for yourself where you take water and add lemon juice to it. When I say lemon juice, I mean fresh lemon juice that you squeeze from a real lemon, not the kind that's pasteurized in the bottle, and maybe a touch of apple cider vinegar. And so those are things that are going to act as solvents. You've heard me say before that water is a universal solvent. And, of course, I kind of have a dumb analogy, but it makes sense. If your blue jeans were super dirty from working outside, like digging a ditch to repair a water line, and you were muddy, one drop of water is not really enough solvent to wash the dirt out of your pants. But if you had a washing machine that had, you know, held 15 gallons of water, now that would remove the dirt, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So you need to drink adequate water. But apple cider vinegar is an amazing solvent for the human body to clean it. And lemon juice is one of my favorite solvents to help clean the body from inside out. So good for the liver. And the kidneys.
Yeah, I put water or lemon in all my water.
Good man. If you were to guess right now, if I asked you what your gut instinct is, why do you think you developed a kidney stone or two kidney stones?
Why did I?
Yeah.
Sugar. I'm looking at the
okay.
List.
All right.
Talked about.
Well, let me ask a different question. How many rounds of antibiotics have you had in your lifetime?
Oh, too many.
Okay, well, that's another component, and there are studies showing the more antibiotics that you've had, the more prone you are to stone formation.
Oh.
So that's one of the reasons why you're continually working at trying to, you know, feed and nourish the lining of your gut. Do you like avocados?
Yes.
Do you like potatoes?
Yeah, but I don't eat them.
Okay.
Just sweet potatoes. Occasionally.
No, sweet potatoes are the best ones. You're actually making the best choice.
Yeah.
A lady told me yesterday that her sweet potatoes are growing like crazy.
That's good. Yeah.
She said her lemons aren't producing, but her sweet potatoes are.
I actually take raw sweet potatoes, cut them up to make them look like carrot sticks.
Really? Okay.
I would tell my grandchildren that those are carrots, and then I'd tell them the truth afterwards.
You mean after the fact?
They wouldn't eat them if they thought they were sweet potatoes.
So you tell them, did you actually like those orange sticks I gave you?
Or maybe that's what she said.
Okay, now my guess would be that if you have had horrific pain last night, and you still have some calcified debris in your kidneys that you need to clean out.
Mm-hmm.
So if you give your body a vacation from sugar, you're helping yourself. But like I told you, gravel root, that is one of the most, that's the best one for dissolving whatever debris is in there, making sure your body can clean it all out.
Well, it's the first I can recall hearing of gravel root.
That's, yeah, gravel root. Kind of like in the driveway, you have a bunch of gravel.
Is there anything that works on tinnitus?
Have you had any traumatic head injuries like concussions?
No.
Okay, are you taking any over-the-counter pain relievers like ibuprofen, Advil, aspirin, Tylenol?
Just last night.
Oh, well, that's what the drug is for. I don't take drugs, but if I went through what you went through, I'd say, can I borrow one of those, please?
I went through 2, 4, 6, 8 100 tablet ibuprofen last night.
There are, actually, I've got this book of research. I'm like so old school. I have books. I know people like the internet. Let me see. This is Dr. Melvin Werbach's. I kind of had it in my pickup this morning. So here it is. Tinnitus. See inner ear dysfunction, page 223. But I know from reading studies that if you take too much aspirin or Tylenol, okay, so that doesn't apply to you. Well, what you're looking at is
that was the exception.
Less than adequate blood flow. Anything to improve blood flow is what you're looking at here.
Now, I have a pulse rate that's around in the 40s and lower.
Yeah, you might be low in B vitamins if that's the case. I know I'm just kind of cutting to the chase.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm on immunodepression. There's impotence. That's not important. Infection, inflammation. Come on, Roy. Inner ear dysfunction. Okay. 103 patients with recent onset tinnitus were given either ginkgo biloba extract. Have you ever heard of ginkgo biloba?
I have.
It said let me see, what does it say? Time before disappearance. It showed I know it doesn't give me the number because I have to actually look up the study, but it comes from the year 1988 from Germany. That's probably one of the reasons why it's not, I don't have the numbers. But it said there was a significant difference in favor of ginkgo biloba. I know I'm not giving you any numbers. I like numbers.
Mm-hmm.
But it showed, and here's a 9-week trial that 12 of 30, here's a different study. Ginkgo biloba was given to 62 patients with inner ear difficulties in an open 9-week trial. And, you know, in the scheme of things, 9 weeks, that's basically just a hair over 2 months. Would you agree with that?
Yep.
Okay. So I wouldn't call that, you know, long-term study.
No.
But they showed that 12 out of 33 tinnitus patients, they had complete remission.
Wow.
And 5 of those had significant reductions. Now, that's in German. I haven't. Yeah, it says it's in German. I can't. Can you read German?
No.
So at least it's interesting right here. It says here's another study: 70 patients that have tinnitus, 47% of the patients treated became symptom-free versus 18% of the controls. That means the controls really didn't do that good, but the ones on Ginkgo biloba did really, really well. I just don't know the length. Oh, it said 3 months. I just saw it. Never mind.
Okay. Any educated guess as to what quantity of ginkgo they would take on a daily basis?
Yeah, probably 240 milligrams.
Okay.
Or if you look at the, let's just say that there's a tablet and it says it contains 240 milligrams, you could either try one or maybe two of those a day.
Okay.
But you realize the principle here is, what helps get the small arteries back in good repair? I know you've heard this before, but probably the main issue when it comes to aging in the brain, they call it cerebral circulatory inefficiency, something like that. But you're not able to deliver enough oxygen and nutrients to the brain cells or to the inner ear, like we're talking about, or to the ear. This is what we're talking about. And so that's one of the hallmarks of aging, is you have a greatly reduced blood flow. To me, this is a big deal, because I think this should make sense, but it doesn't make sense to everybody. You've got to get up and move. That's why going for a walk in the neighborhood wearing your swimming trunks is really the right plan. But in these studies, and that's the only thing I'm looking at right here, they're talking about the use of ginkgo biloba.
Yep.
I'm sure I could find something in a different book. Here's one that says ginger. No, that's a different. That's on being seasick. Sorry about that. No, these things are easy to look up. It says here that marijuana works. I'm just joking. I made that up. I didn't mean that at all. I'm just teasing. So there's plenty of research that would show how we tackle this. But ginkgo biloba,
that's one of the
very unique compounds that helps restore circulation to the body. And I can tell you right now, the better the circulation to your brain and to your muscles and to your ear and to your eyes, the better your health is going to be. That's going to be your ticket to doing all the great things that you want, like walking around the neighborhood in the morning.
Did you mentioned once about taking, I think it was a half a teaspoon of baking soda and twice a day.
Yeah, once a day is fine. That's very soothing to the kidneys. It helps put out the acid, which that's what a Coca-Cola and refined sugar is. It's high, high acid food. So high acids, they tend to strain the body. So baking soda can help soothe them.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for all this. I'm going to hang up and let you talk to somebody else. I'll probably call you back in a week or so with other questions.
All right. Have a good day.
You too.
Bye-bye. Thank you very much, sir. Bye-bye. Okay, if somebody else would like to join me on the radio, this program is Health Essentials. If you're not familiar with it, maybe this is the first time that you've listened. But I would be glad to assist you and to help you with whatever questions you may have, especially as it relates to how do you help assist the body to heal in a non-toxic way. The number is 903-586-6592. Good morning and welcome to the program. Good morning. Well, they hung up on me. That's okay. Or we lost the connection. I bet you know what happens to me probably at least once or twice a week. I drop a call. I don't intend to do it, but that's what happens with cell phone technology. Landlines, not so much. Okay. If anybody would like to call, there is a phone line open at 903-586-6592. Well, I missed that one again. Sorry about that. I think the other person has to actually hang up in order to clear the line. I'll try again. Yep, they got to hang up. I know, this is complicated being on the radio. So, if you'll just hang up your phone after the last call. Somebody's calling line one. I can't answer. Oh, no, I can try. Good morning. Welcome to the program. Nope, didn't work. Good morning. Welcome to the program. Hello? I have no idea why that's not working. It's just going to be one of those days. Well, what do you do if it doesn't work the way that you planned it to? Okay. Let me read this to you right here. And, you know, you can take this however you like, but I really hope this information is able to either encourage you or to help you or to bless you. So just consider this. And here's the way that I want to frame it. Anything that improves, you do understand that your blood is what carries the ocean of oxygen and nutrients to all the precious cells in the body. It's not just your brain cells or your neurons. No. It's everything from the organs to the toes. Here, we'll try it one more time. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan.
Hi, how are you today?
I'm very well. How are you?
Excellent, thank you. How can I be of assistance to you?
Could you please talk about pre-dialysis and if there's anything you could do about not going on dialysis?
Okay, so are we talking about an individual that's had many, many years dealing with this, like decades, or is this a problem that just started because of an accident or an injury?
It's something that just started, and I think it's because of something that you just said. It's my sister. She's taken a lot of antibiotics.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. And
bless her heart.
She doesn't want to go on dialysis. She's 78 years old, and she recently said that she would prefer to go to hospice instead of doing dialysis. They have something called a home dialysis.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. But she lives alone, and she's afraid of needles and different things like that. But can you talk about that, please? And
I'm giving you. I'll be glad to.
All right, thank you.
Thank you very much. What I want everyone to do is just take this as information. I'm not trying to prescribe. There's no way that I can understand the sweet lady's problem in its full entirety. But what her sister is saying is she has a 78-year-old sister, and basically, if they're recommending dialysis, that means you're in renal or kidney failure. Okay, and what she may be referring to is just what I've said probably multiple times. You realize there's a lot of different drugs that are prescribed for different reasons. Well, there's one class of drugs that are called antibiotics. And yes, I completely agree. They can be a complete, total cure to a person who has double pneumonia. For all I know, maybe a lot of people would be dead and not up and active and well if it weren't for antibiotics. That's obviously true. But on the flip side of the coin, there's a dark side. There's a lot of people that have what's called kidney failure because antibiotics can completely destroy the kidneys in some people. Yes, I'm well aware maybe that's a very uncommon, if not rare, event. I get that. But for the person that takes the antibiotic and the end result is they're in kidney failure all of a sudden because of it, you know, for them, it's a hard reality. You get that? Okay. First thing you want to do is you want to completely avoid any refined processed foods. And what that leaves you with is things that are just real. And so one thing that I might do if it were me is I would probably recommend that she would eat fish. That could be everything from salmon to flounder, halibut, cod, haddock, pollock, maybe even, you know, other fish from the ocean. And the reason I'm choosing that is because it's very, very easy for the body to digest, or easier. One of the jobs of the kidneys is to help direct protein to where it needs to go. Another major job is filtration of the blood, making sure that your blood's clean. That's one of the reasons why if a person's in kidney failure, they want to put them on dialysis so they can use either home peritoneal dialysis. They're trying to filter and remove impurities. They're using chemicals, but they're trying to keep the body from being totally poisoned and toxic from its own dirty blood. I get that. So, but when you eat fish, you're trying to make it very easy on your body to get the very things it needs to keep your body in good repair. Another thing that I would consider and think about is all the things that might help in this. And each one of these is probably going to be an incremental step. There's a substance called digestive enzymes. What they do is they ensure that your body is able to completely break down food. If you can do that, that takes a little bit of a burden off the kidneys. Now, I'm a fan of using what are called protomorphogens. I'm not offering this as a cure. I'm not offering it as a medical treatment. You need to go to the kidney doctor for your medical treatments. I'm just saying, what could you do to try to feed and nourish your kidneys to see if there's a chance, a possibility, that your kidneys could start to bounce back and they could actually heal? Because if the kidneys are in better repair, if they're in better working order, then what you have is you have kidneys where your numbers start to look better. And so several of the numbers that you're looking at, one's called creatinine on a blood test. The higher that numbers goes, the dirtier your blood is, the less the kidneys are able to work. Another one's called BUN. That's an acronym, blood, urea, nitrogen. As that goes up, that's a pretty accurate marker to determine the kidneys are not in great shape. Another big one is called GFR. That's another acronym. That stands for glomerular filtration rate. The lower that number goes, that tells me how efficiently the kidneys are working. So if your GFR is at 95, that means your kidneys are working at 95% efficiency. You know, loose translation, but that's still accurate. If your GFR is at 5, that means your kidneys not really working at all. That's a sad deal. So what you should do is you need to start doing things that help the kidneys, give them every chance to heal. One of those is what the gentleman mentioned earlier. He mentioned the use of baking soda. There are numerous studies that have been done in medicine or by kidney specialists showing or demonstrating that taking baking soda, it can have a very positive effect on helping the kidneys function better. I'm not promising anything to you, at least I don't think you think that I am, but you might want to consider baking soda. Okay? So it could be a half of a teaspoon, stir it in water, take that twice a day, or go to your kidney specialist and ask them specifically, how much baking soda should I be taking a day? So you need to cover that. And that's something that can incrementally help give you a distinct advantage toward healing and repair. Does that make sense? One study that I read years ago, and I want to say it's from the Journal of Occupational Therapy. I don't always know why these articles are found in journals like that, but they showed when people would walk barefoot on the earth, that's called dirt or grass, or your garden, St. Augustine, Bermuda grass, Bahia grass, whatever you've got, walking barefoot on the dirt, it has been shown to play a positive role or to make a positive impact upon helping the kidneys. Are you with me on that? All right. Number next. I think I read an article months ago that talked about the role of Brazilian green propolis. Propolis is kind of the glue that bees use in their hive to kind of hold everything together or keep it all glued together. A lot of my beekeeping patients, they'll describe that they got to like scrape the propolis out so they can open it up and get to what they want, which is the honey and probably other stuff also. But propolis, that has been shown to be very beneficial to people that have kidneys that are not great working order. And you know as well as I do, nobody outlives their kidneys. So we're trying to give your sweet sister every possible chance to improve herself. So she's got to completely stop eating processed foods. That means if she wants real food, I wouldn't have any problem with her eating some frozen cherries. The last time I checked, those are very good at lowering uric acid levels. A lot of time as uric acid levels build up, you start seeing more and more kidney problems. And of course, the food that contains the highest amount of uric acid, that's called black tea. Sometimes it's called orange pekoe tea. But if you go to a restaurant and say, hey, I want a glass of tea, that's black tea. You don't want to drink that if you have kidney failure. But herbal teas, something like rose hips, hibiscus, dandelion, those have been shown to be very soothing and easy on the kidneys, not hard on them. Something to give yourself a benefit. I am a huge fan when it comes to kidney trouble of trying to lay off the grains. I've had a lot of patients that have told me their experiences, and when they tell me they improve when they cut out all the grains and the sugars and the starches, I tend to believe them. Maybe one more thing that I'll mention. There are specific supplements that are designed to feed and nourish the kidneys. Actually, let me say it a different way. If somebody had liver failure, does it make sense that you might want to give them some beef liver? Because beef liver contains 100% of everything that the liver is made of. And so you're trying to make it easy for your liver to heal itself. And let's just say somebody's got a liver that's been severely damaged by just long-term alcohol consumption. Well, you know, maybe there's a chance if you can actually help the liver to heal. Well, how would you do that? Well, wish we could handcuff them to a palm tree where they can't get alcohol. But legally, I don't think you can do that. I think illegally you could, though. That's just a joke. But if you give them liver, you're at least providing the raw nutrients that your liver needs to rebuild and repair itself. Well, the same is true for the kidneys. There's plenty of companies out there that make nutritional supplements that target the healing and the repair of the kidneys. And so I don't need this to be like a deep conversation. I just want to say, if your kidneys are bad, why don't you take supplements that help the kidneys to heal? One of those could be called RenaFood. Another one's called Renatrophin PMG. There's another product called Arginex. And there's many, many other companies that have things that are very, very good for helping the kidneys to heal. So I've given you a bunch of ideas. What you've got to do is when the kidneys are sick, you got to get the person, you got to convince them to get up and move all day long. I know it sounds appealing to sit in front of the computer for 12 hours a day and be on Facebook, but that's probably not in your best interest. You've actually got to get more blood going through the kidneys. You may have heard me mention in the past, there was a study where they went into nursing home facilities where people were more bedfast or immobile or wheelchair bound. And they asked the question, how many gallons of blood goes through the kidneys each 24-hour day of somebody in a nursing home? And it was about 200 gallons. Well, I don't mean to be rude, but that's pitiful. If you're only getting 200 gallons of blood through your kidneys a day, there's like no chance for them to heal. None. A normal person, when they're up and moving and doing normal activities of daily living, they're probably getting about 2,000 gallons of blood a day. And if you'll just consider that your blood is this living life force, it's a river of food for the kidneys. And if you have pitiful little water flowing through your kidneys with its nutrients, or the blood rather, how can you deliver enough oxygen? So let's just say it a different way also. Well, you already get the gist. You got to get moving. So one of the main tenets of somebody that has macular degeneration is they just are not delivering enough blood, oxygen, nutrition to the eyes. And so what happens? The body is desperate to get more oxygen to the eyes because it needs them to produce vision, that it starts growing new blood vessels. The problem is these new blood vessels, they grow right over the macula, and it causes a person to become blind. Well, you got to come to, this is reality. If you want to heal your macular degeneration, but you're not willing to exercise and get enough oxygen to the eyes, I don't know what you're doing. I mean, that should be the number one at the top of the totem pole. If you want to heal, you need to get more oxygen to your eyes and to your kidneys and to your liver. And maybe I should say the heart and the muscles and the bones and what organs did I leave out? I think I left out the tongue. No, I'm just joking. And so it's so hard to give supplements. It's kind of like that study that I read about the people that had osteopenia. Well, guess which ones did the best? The ones that were out in the sunshine, in the fresh air, and they walked in the sunlight every day. They did the best. Okay. If you'd like to join me on the radio, there is a phone line open at 903-586-6592. I think there's about 8 minutes or so left in the program. I can get you right in if you call right now. 903-586-6592. Alrighty. I know there were probably three or four people calling when I was trying to talk about the kidneys, but now you can get in. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan. I just wanted to ask you some questions. I have SVT.
You have what?
Supraventricular tachycardia.
Okay.
And I'm supposed to go through an ablation in a few more weeks. Any information you might have on just preparing me for that?
Sure. How many diet drugs have you taken?
None.
Okay, then you're in good shape.
Okay.
Okay, so I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
So they want to do an ablation to try to put a stop to all the electrical thunderstorms on the heart?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Hey, are you taking any drugs of any kind?
No, I am not.
Do you have any other problems like diabetes or kidney problems?
I do not.
Okay. Well, what's the reason for the supraventricular tachycardia?
I really don't know.
Are you under a lot of stress?
I was, yes.
Okay. Well, I mean,
I have been over the last 7 years, but
well, I am. I'm sorry for your stress. It is.
It's eased up a lot now. And what I've been doing is I am watching my diet, and I'm losing weight, and I'm also walking a lot and exercising.
I used to take anywhere
from 7,000 to 10,000 steps a day.
Are you almost perfect?
No, far from it.
Well, you sound like you're doing all the right things. I'm so proud of you. So,
okay.
Let me give you three or four different ideas, and then we'll just start sorting through them. I don't know if I'll do them in order, but have you ever heard of a type of a diet called a carnivore diet?
No.
Okay. Well, a carnivore diet would suggest eating meat and maybe even lots of it. I'm not trying to scare you, but do you know what the heart is actually made of?
Well,
kind of protein. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so, over the years, I tend to be good at making observations after they happen, and they're very, very obvious. So, when somebody has heart failure and the heart's not in good repair, I've seen this work over and over again. If they adopt, and there's a lot of ways to do this, and so let me give you one example. What if you said, I'm in love with fruit and vegetables, I can't live without them? I'd say, fine. Eat those for lunch, but your very last meal of the day, only eat meat.
Okay.
And so if you had no bread, no potatoes, no fresh gravy fried in bacon grease.
Right, exactly.
I think that was my childhood, right?
Yeah.
Did your mama keep a big crock full of bacon grease on the stove?
Oh, absolutely.
Yes. It was in all the vegetables. Anyway. So if all you did was have meat only for supper, that could look everything like a huge salmon fillet with butter and lemon juice on it, and you could season it however you want. If you tell me you like garlic and salt and pepper, I'd say fine, go for it. But it's just the idea of only eating protein and fat. And what happens when you do that? Your body sort of switches gears, and it goes into healing and repair damaged structures. And so I've seen that work over and over for even, I've seen many cases where somebody was on the heart transplant list and all of a sudden their heart magically healed and it didn't need that anymore. They didn't need to get a heart transplant is what I'm saying.
Right.
Okay, next thing that I want to think about, anytime that there's any altered electrical activity, I always think there's been some damage to the vagus nerve. And that's a nerve that your body uses to try to contend and deal with stress. Have you ever heard of an herb called ashwagandha?
Yes.
Ashwagandha is really worth taking a look at because it really plays a role in helping your body down-regulate all the harmful effects of all the cortisol and all the adrenaline that your body's been pumping out for 7 years while you're under horrific stress. So that would be one thing.
Okay, so ashwagandha, would that just be taking like in capsule form, tea form?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Okay. And sometimes I recommend a little bit more than what the manufacturer says, but if you took a little bit more and you saw an amazing difference in how your body felt, wouldn't that be proof that maybe you're heading in the right direction?
Absolutely.
Okay, one of my most favorite, my favorite two minerals when it comes to the heart would have to be zinc and magnesium.
Okay, I take both of those.
Good girl. Are you taking enough magnesium?
I'm not sure.
Cod liver oil also plays a role in helping to regulate electrical activity of the heart.
Okay. Okay.
There you go. Bingo. And if I had to choose, and I'm just giving you information, I'm not trying to overpromise anything to you, but there is an herbal remedy that's been used for centuries. It's called hawthorn. You ever heard of hawthorn?
I have.
Hawthorn is quite amazing. Another one that I would look at is called inositol hexaphosphate. Sometimes it's called...
You're going to spell that for me, aren't you?
Oh, great. I'm going to have to work on that one. Okay, inositol is spelled I-N-O-S-I-T-O-L. That's inositol. Hexaphosphate is just H-E-X-A and then phosphate, P-H-O-S-P-H-A-T-E.
Okay, got it. Okay.
It's called inositol hexaphosphate. It's called IP6. Now, that's the one. If you were to do like a literature search on that stuff and say, what does this have to do with heart health? You're going to find out that people that have the highest blood concentration of the inositol hexaphosphate, which comes from stuff like probably the modern source where they get this and put it in a supplement, just from brown rice.
Okay.
It's going to be the germ or the husk. That's where they get it from, the part that people don't eat. I'm not telling you to eat brown rice, but I'm just saying it grows natural, organic brown rice. You get that?
Gotcha.
And so inositol hexaphosphate, it helps keep your heart clean, so you don't want to have excessive debris and a buildup of waste. Now, if I were to look at your blood tests, I would look to see if there's any clue that maybe if your ferritin levels are a little bit higher than what they should be, or one called homocysteine. You ever heard of homocysteine?
Yes.
When that goes up, you're going to have more issues on every level and every kind of heart problem known to man. And so you want your homocysteine to be around 7 or maybe 6 to 7, somewhere around there. When it starts jumping up above 10... 11, 12, 13, 14, that's where you have all the heart problems.
Okay.
And actually, one study done years ago showed that homocysteine, just in and of itself, it was 40 times more predictive of developing heart problems than a lipid profile. And a lipid profile is where they measure total cholesterol, HDL, LDL, and triglycerides. You tell me, would you like a test that's 40 times more predictive of a problem?
Okay.
Because what you do is, if homocysteine's elevated, you're saying, man, I wonder what I can learn. Is there something I should do, doctor? And he goes, yes. As homocysteine goes up, that means you're not doing so well. Well, what can I do? And they can start fleshing out what to do.
Okay.
Sometimes it's a person's having a hard time getting enough B vitamins. That could be one of the solutions to correct it.
Right.
So... those are things that I would look at if it were me, but I might consider having just a carnivore evening meal. I know this is going to rub a lot of people the wrong way. They're going to say, don't you know that's got cholesterol in it?
But that would be a good thing. Okay, how much magnesium should I be taking?
I think that's the one that you're going to have to play with. I know you're a lady. I'm not trying to be gross, but do you have good bowel movements?
Yes.
Okay, then you're probably taking enough.
Okay,
we're completely out of time, but thank you for your phone call.
I appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. Have a great day, ma'am. Bye-bye.